Thank you both for being here. I have as my two guests, Rich Budd and Simone Riscala. And what we're talking about is basically the youth. A question that has been posed to me a lot is what our youth needs and what we as a community, as a church, can do for our youth to help them form into adults that are happy, that are seeking God, that are feeling fulfilled. Because as we know from all the school shootings that have been cropping up over and over again, and the movie theater shootings, and the almost every week some kind of horrific event mostly involving young males, a lot of them without a strong household foundation, without a strong father foundation. And so what I want to talk about is some of the questions that I've been getting on what can we as a community and as a church do to step up to the plate a little bit more. So I want to introduce our two guests, and Rich Budd is a director of religious education for a parish in the Archdiocese of Washington, D.C., and he works with every age level and faith level, so he's really coming from a broad perspective. And when I asked what the biggest challenge facing the group that he specifically serves, he said it was mostly being evangelized. So, Rich, do you want to just, as an intro, talk a little bit about what that answer meant to you?
Sure. I think oftentimes when we think about what our young people are doing in the church, we immediately go to religious education classes, and, you know, what they're learning in youth ministry, you know, service projects, etc. And what we forget is that catechesis is only part of the overall journey of our formation of faith. Also, we first need to be evangelized. And evangelization is simply meeting Christ and all the dimensions in which Christ can be encountered, whether that be through liturgy or through service to another, or through just having a good time within a godly environment. I think we often skip that in an attempt to make sure that our kids know the faith. But it's kind of too long to the whole breathing system of the Spirit. You need to be evangelizing the faith and actually encounter the person of Christ, and then learn about him in the context of catechesis.
Okay, great. So, and you actually said that we've tricked ourselves into thinking that being educated in the faith is the same as being evangelized in the faith. And I think that's interesting. People that would hear that quote might think that doesn't sound very Catholic from what they're used to, because I think a lot of people have this idea of Catholicism as rules and just learning, like you said, A, B, C, D, and not necessarily learning with the heart.
Exactly, and that's really, I think, a point that Pope Francis has been trying to make, which I think he's been misinterpreted, as he's been in so many other things, because when he made the point that we can't be obsessed with things like abortion and kind of the moral code, he wasn't saying that that can't be a major focus, or we shouldn't focus on those things. He was saying that we can't start with those things. We first have to start with knowing Christ. Because if we don't know Christ, the moral code becomes oppressive. It's only within a relationship with Christ that the moral imperative that the church offers us become a free, you know, mode of perfection.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so often I experience parents that just drop their kids off on Sunday morning for religious education classes and expect that their job in forming their children's faith life is done. But it's so much more than that.
Right. Thank you. And then we also have Simone Riscala, and Simone works at St. Mary's Catholic High School in Phoenix, Arizona, where she's a senior theology teacher, and she teaches both juniors and seniors in the high school, and most of her students are of Mexican or African descent, and they're at least nominally Catholic or culturally Catholic, and Simone, you said one of the biggest challenges was also on the same lines of being catechized, that most of the children that you work with, their parents are not well catechized, and so basically it's that problem of being culturally Catholic but not really truly living and loving and understanding the faith. Do you want to expand a little bit more on that?
Yeah, thanks, Kim. I think it's similar to the problem that Rich has, and one that all of us who are working in ministry in the church are dealing with, namely the problem that the crafters of Vatican II perceived, that we may or may not have well-catechized Catholics, but we don't have Catholics who have encountered Christ. And one of the problems that I have at the school is that because they have a Catholic culture, a good Mexican, African Catholic culture, they think that they know the gospel when they're just kind of living what's left of a cultural remnant of a previous encounter that their grandparents had. So my job is to basically discern how I can apply the call to evangelization, which is how do we make the gospel attractive to modern man, and for me, modern man are my 16, 17, 18, 18-year-old students who think they already know the gospel.
Right, and it's interesting that you say, in a way, they're still attached to certain cultural aspects. Is that like the rosary, or what are, because I've seen the same thing in certain cultures where maybe going to mass isn't necessarily important, but the rosary is, or maybe some other traditions.
Okay. Yeah, for my students, it's the feast days, the bigger Mexican feast days, the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe. They love Mary. They're in the habit of signing the cross and praying before football games and basketball games and, having the statues up. I mean, they love Catholic things, which is a good thing. If the education is behind it, if the encounter isn't behind it, then when it comes to making important decisions for their life, it doesn't necessarily apply in terms of moral decisions. And discipleship is certainly impossible if it just stays at the level of kind of cultural gestures.
Right. And I know, speaking from my own experience, I had a period of falling away in high school and then coming back as a young adult to the faith. And I think one of the things that I was seeking was the God that everyone talks about who really truly loves you, because somehow that got lost in translation for me. So Rich, okay. I'll pose the question to you first. What do you think young people are seeking or searching when you particularly have encountered them? Is there kind of an across the board that they're looking for?
Yeah, I think they might not be able to articulate it, but I think young people are looking for relationships. You can go all the way back to Genesis. God said that it's not good for man to be alone. And relationships, quality relationships, are becoming extreme and rare commodity in our culture these days. I mean, everything from broken families to right down to our iPhones. You know, we're a very disjointed culture. We are a conglomerate of individuals rather than a community. And young people inherently know that they want this, and so number one, they seek it. But number two, when they don't find it, that's when they become embittered and they move on to something else that's satisfying, that's longing.
Right. It's interesting how entrenched we are in social media now, which is good in a lot of ways, and then also damaging towards relationships, as you said, in other ways. And you can tell how the culture has shifted even when you ask somebody, do you know so-and-so? It's like, oh, yeah, I do. I know him really well. We're Facebook friends. And it's kind of like, you know, you like their posts every so often, and that makes you guys friends, you know, and, or you...
I have Facebook friends that I've never met in real life,
right.
You know what I mean, like, so, but yeah, just to your point.
And it's funny when you talk to somebody and they can say, oh, did you hear so-and-so did this or did that or had a baby or whatever, and you ask further details and they say, oh, I don't know, I just read about it on Facebook or, you know, whatever, and it's just funny because when you step back and look at it, you really don't have a relationship with that person. You only heard the news with however many other 100 people or 1,000 people. You know, so, yeah, it's a very different element to our current culture. And, Simone, I'll ask you the same thing to expand or to give your perspective on that. With the young people that you've encountered recently or in the past, what do you think is that primary thing? It's probably along the same lines, but have you seen it in different ways, or do you really have to dig for that with them, or is it kind of evident?
Yeah, I think definitely the relationship, the need to belong, the need to be affirmed, to know that they're good. My students have complained to me that in the past, they've only seen theology classes and religion classes as, here are all the ways that you are wrong and sinful and bad, and hadn't first been taught that they are good and made for happiness.
Mm-hmm.
Even that kind of language, when I use it in class, because I begin every class with, you were made for happiness, it's brand new to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a reality that I had to face. One of the ways in which that I, because I can't be the only happy Catholic in their life, one of the ways in which I kind of wanted to show them that the Catholic proposal is a path of happiness and the highest path, was to share my own friendship, my own deep friendships with people. It definitely happened this in relationships. And one of the ways I did this, and Kim, you know this because you participated in this, was to have my friends make YouTube videos talking about their life, their vocation, and serious things that high school students want to talk about. They want to talk about life and their questions about different areas of life. They just need someone to kind of connect the relevancy of their questions and their needs and their desires with what the church has to say about them and the church cares for them. Throughout the year when I would play my friends' videos, kind of talking to them from all over the country, they were really moved by that. And that was one of the best things from my class. Not the catechism, not the Bible, because again, you have to be evangelized first to care about those things. But the fact that there are so many young people who are finding happiness in Christ, and that I, as their teacher, have a relationship and a deep friendship with these people beyond Facebook and kind of these false forms of authentic friendship. So
right.
That was a very interesting thing to note.
Yeah, that was a great idea and a great way to present that aspect of our faith to the students. I really was happy to participate in that. And so, Simone, I'll stick with you then to go into the next question that kind of segues. Recently, I particularly encountered a mom who is a convert, and she is really frustrated with the lack of programs that the Catholic Church has, particularly for young people, and especially coming from a Protestant background where there's so many activities and Bible studies and groups and things for, you know, very young children all the way through their youth and adolescents and teens and everything like that. And there's a lot of criticism, not only from former Protestants, but from Catholics and others as well, that not enough is being done. There's not enough of the right ministries or information for young people to be able to connect with each other outside of their religious education, which I know Rich kind of said about dropping them off and then the parents believe that's the end of the line for their duties. But do you see that there is enough that the church is providing? Do you think that the church community needs to step up more, or what's the answer there?
Well, and there's always a long-term and a short-term answer. But I guess the short-term answer is to really pray and ask for the right answer for her family, for her teen. I do think Protestant churches do a stellar job of offering youth ministry programs and things. So borrow and steal from them. I mean, as a kid, I went to an evangelical vacation Bible study, and that was a great experience for me. So if they're doing something right, you know, copy it. You know, start it at your parish. So I would encourage her to kind of look at her own children to see what her needs are, and to see if there's a possibility of beginning something new at the parish that would cater to that. I think oftentimes people want just like this program to happen and don't realize that whatever desire is on their heart, whatever need that they have, maybe there are other people that share that, and that whatever is on your heart could be the beginning of something new to happen at your parish. So that's kind of the short-term answer. I think long-term, it's more difficult. We need more disciples in the church. Obviously, we have, you know, a call for a new evangelization. One of the most effective things I think that can really transform a parish is to invite people to discern their spiritual gifts. Lumen Gentium talks about this in chapter 2 on the people of God, and calling the lay faithful to discern their spiritual gifts, so that they would know where they can serve in the parish. Not everyone's called to youth ministry particular. Not everybody's called to bereavement team or lecturing. And I think people want to serve. They just don't know where they fit. But they need to discern their charisms to kind of know how to do that. The St. Catherine of Siena Institute in Colorado, led by Sherry Waddell, who wrote that very helpful book, Forming Intentional Disciples, The Path to Knowing and Finding Jesus, has a spiritual gift, a charism discernment program that you can bring to your parish. I think that's a great step in the right direction to help people in the parish who are really maybe just seed waiting to be watered to know where they can serve, because these kids do need relationships, and maybe there are people in the parish that are waiting to be that relationship for them. They just don't know that they can do that, and they need to be invited into it.
Yeah, that's excellent. Thank you. And I completely agree with you that I think there are a lot of people who want to be involved. It's kind of, I see it in a few different ways. People that want to be involved but don't have the background, as you were talking about some of the parents of your kids that you work with, they don't really have any foundation, and so maybe they want to help out, but they don't feel like they have enough to offer, or things like that. And then there's others who can't wait to get out of the door after the 1 hour mark on Sundays, and they never want to look back or spend another additional minute in, you know, church. And then there's the people that kind of expect everyone else to step up and just kind of criticize what's not being done, or expect the priests or the bishops or the Pope to do everything. And so I kind of see, you know, those three different camps forming. So Rich, I know that you deal with a lot of those, probably all three of those different groups of people and their mentalities in the various ministries that you work with. So what would you say if someone asked you, and they probably have, if the church is providing enough of the right ministries or information for young people and giving them enough spiritual food and answers that as adults they're going to thrive and stick, you know, strongly in their faith?
I'd first ask them what they mean by church. As you kind of alluded to, we often think about the, when we say the church, we're referring to the Vatican or your local diocese, or even what is my pastor and his team providing. But when we say the church, we should really be asking, what am I providing enough? You know, the church starts with each individual person. There's a book recently called Rebuilt, and it's about this parish north of Baltimore and how they really kind of rebuilt their parish from the ground up. And it's by Michael White and Tom Corcoran. And one of the key elements that they point out is that everybody in your parish needs to be a minister. I was glad that Simone brought up the Siena Institute and forming intentional disciples. I think that the key element concerning our spiritual gifts, as Paul said, each of us is given different spiritual gifts. So some are called to work directly with our young people. Some are called to change the garbage. You know what I mean? So discerning our spiritual gifts is crucial. As a church, we all need to be focused on that. But then also to remember that the answer starts with me. Mm-hmm. And so am I making myself available to the structures that are already in place? Because we can't know if something's failing if it's not being utilized. If it's not, you know, so often I find as somebody that works in a parish, you can come up with a brilliant scheme for a program or a ministry, but if nobody comes, then it's worthless.
Mm-hmm.
And we've come to really view the parish with a consumer mindset. So what do I want to get out of it? Mm-hmm. How is it serving my needs? And we need to break through that and really look again. I know I'm going to sound like a broken record, but what does the community need from me? And how am I going to grow myself in serving the community? So to answer your question, I would say, no, we're not providing enough for our young people. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we need to come up with a brilliant scheme. As John Paul II said in Catechesi Tridende, that at the heart of catechesis is a person. And catechesis is about discovering the mystery of Christ in all those dimensions. And so, as I was kind of pointing out in my introduction, we need to approach this question from all angles, and rather than what religious education program we can implement or what youth ministry we can do, or am I engaging the youth at the parish in every aspect? Am I providing, you know, am I engaging the youth with Christ at the CYO baseball game, or at the parish picnic, or when a loved one has died, et cetera. You know, so the possibilities are endless because the opportunities in life are endless. Mm. So.
Yeah, that is so true. And it's so true that we all need to become involved in a different way. And it made me think, as both of you were talking about, recently I heard somebody say that evangelization is walking with someone in their discovery of Christ, basically, of a relationship with Christ. It's not just getting them into a program or, you know, kind of throwing a Bible at them and running to the next person so that you can say, okay, well, I evangelized this person, you know, on to the next one, on to the next one. It's really a friendship because that's what Christ is asking of us and that's what he's ultimately asking of each other. And the only way that you can truly help to evangelize someone else is to walk with them towards Christ in a friendship side by side. And I think that a lot of times we don't necessarily look at it like that, and maybe we don't want the burden of thinking that an evangelization is such a long process, like a lifelong process of walking with another person, as opposed to, you know, like you were saying, Rich, that we have a consumerist mentality, and we also, I think, have a mentality of how long is this going to last? How long am I in for? You know, how much time am I giving or signed up for? We're always kind of wanting to know what we're giving before we actually give, and we want it to have like a cap so that we don't have to be committed to too much. And I was thinking, it was funny, you know, my husband and I have these friends that are both converts. They're married and they're both converts, and they actually asked us, they, you know, were coming to Mass every week with their four kids, and they noticed that all the cars were backed in the parking lot, you know, and they actually said, we're just confused. Was there like something in the bulletin, or is there some kind of protocol that you're supposed to back in? Is it like bad etiquette to pull in forward or something? Because coming from the Protestant church, they couldn't understand. And we were like, no, that's just because everyone wants to get out of the parking lot as fast as humanly possible. But it was just so funny to us that they were asking it as an innocent, realistic question, you know? So and just like kind of, you know, they said, we come into the parking lot and it's like all these eyes staring at you, you know, like all these headlights are just like staring you down as you drive into the parking lot. And they just weren't used to that because in the Protestant parishes that they were from, people would plan to stay till whenever. So I guess I would, you know, to go off of what we just said, how would people listening to this podcast become involved? If someone's listening and they say, okay, you know, I'm not sure exactly what I have to give or what my gifts are, but I would like to, who do I talk to? Do I go to the religious director? Do I go to the priest? Do I go to the secretary? Where do I find out where they're lacking or what I could do? Or from this point on, I don't know, what should I just call the parish or what? So Rich, what would you say would be the first step for someone to become involved?
I'd say begin. You know, I find a lot of times, like somebody that needs to recruit volunteers, people are intimidated. They won't come right out necessarily and say it, but they'll come up with a million and one excuses why they can't volunteer their time. And generally it comes down to, you know, they're intimidated about whether or not they have the ability, or they're worried about, you know, a lot of times in the parish, we find somebody that does want to give, and we tap them out till they're completely burnt out. And people kind of know that. So they're worried that they're going to be asked to do so much that they don't have any freedom. And so I think, if you're trying to decide what to do, I would say do something, but don't just do something aimlessly. Be very clear about what commitment you can give and start small, because if you can start small and just do a little bit, you become more comfortable and you become, you realize that you do have some skills to offer. You do have life experience to contribute. And over time, you may find that you have other gifts that you didn't realize you had. Or you may find that you have a particular ministry that you love. But you'll never know that if you sit back in the wings trying to calculate. So I would say the first step is to just take a step. As small as that step might be, it might be talking to the pastor about maybe starting a coffee ministry after Mass.
I like that one.
Pouring coffee for people. As they're walking through the line, you're talking to them, being friendly, you know, building up that community. It might be taking community to the taking communion to the sick. It might be being a chaperone at a youth event where you're not in charge, but you're just kind of there and you're helping out. So I would say do something. Start small, though, so that you're not intimidated by your lack of experience and that you don't get burnt out.
Right. And I've definitely seen the people who have gotten burnt out. I know even in our church that we belong to right now, it's a phenomenal parish, but you look at the church bulletin each week, and it tells you who to contact for certain programs, and there's one large family that's very active, and I mean, it's almost every other program is run by one of the people in this family, and we always joke that if this family ever leaves the parish, our parish is going to crumble, you know?
Yeah, I have a couple families like that.
So, I mean, it's just like, who would run all of these ministries? Because it's like the mom, the dad, the sister, the brother, the uncle, the, you know, and now, you know, in-laws and things like that. It's like, wow, if we lost this family, we'd be down to, like, one ministry or something.
But, yeah, the program wouldn't happen or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Simone, did you have anything else that you've seen from your experience in encouraging people to take that first step?
Yes. I mean, when I was in Rich's position at a parish before my teaching job, I never proposed. Our parish certainly lacked a lot of programs and needed more programs. But again, the solution isn't a program, right? So I never started anything at the parish as a DRE. When I was a DRE, and I was a DRE for 3 years, that I first myself didn't want. So since I, as Simone, desired a Bible study, we started one, and it bore fruit. When I, as Simone, wanted a coffee after Sunday, as Rich mentioned an idea with the parents, you know, I started one, and it bore fruit. It came from a desire. So I think the first question for the person who wants to get involved is, what is it that you desire? Do you desire more friendships at church? And that can happen best through offering like a coffee for parents during RE thing. Then propose it. Do you want to know the word of God more deeply? And there isn't a Bible study at your parish and the Protestant church down the street has 10 of them. Propose it. Look at what your desire is. And that is the best way to feel free in a ministry and not to get burnt out, you know, because if, you know, you're an introvert who would rather, you know, do bereavement team and kind of do one-on-one ministry with those who are grieving a loss of a friend or family member, do that. Don't put yourself in a ministry that's going to burn you out or make you do something that isn't you. You know, the best way to avoid burnout is to do what excites you and what attracts you. So...
Great. I like how you said to find freedom in the ministry, because ultimately you shouldn't feel shackled or burdened or, you know,
no,
like, oh, great, I have to give because nobody else is doing it. I think if you are passionate about it and you have a desire for a certain ministry, I think maybe you don't feel like you're the most equipped person, and we know God always works with those people anyway. So you don't have to feel like you have the most knowledge or, you know, the most experience, but I think out of that desire will, as you said, bear fruit in the ministry that God's putting on your heart.
Right. This is what I've seen from my experience.
So, as kind of a last hard-hitting question, and I'll stick with you right now, Simone, since you just gave us that answer. What gives you, as Simone, hope when you hear the desperation of the church through the people that you serve, as well as the news reports and the countless stories that we hear, especially involving young people, probably around the ages of the people that you're serving, taking their own lives, taking other lives in mass shootings and all? I mean, obviously there's a cry that's getting louder in our culture, and it's coming from the same kind of age group, the same kind of, you know, we see a pattern here over and over again, and it used to be fewer and farther between, but now it's becoming more and more and louder and louder. And what would your answer be? What gives you hope in that desperation? And how do you answer that call in the people that you serve?
Well, this past year was a real shocker for me in that I was not expecting so much suffering in the lives of my students. So many kids opening up to me about what's going on at home, family members in jail, drug busts, suicides, dad who's addicted to crack. I was not prepared for that level of suffering and loss in their lives. And so young age, I was fairly sheltered in high school. So these kinds of very sad, desperate stories were really overwhelming for me, especially as a first-year teacher this past year. But what has given me hope is the fact that they want happiness, and we can propose that to them in the church. And I know, and especially in the harder days, like, Christ, you are victorious. For that I'm certain. And that fact that he has already won propels me to pray more, to fight harder, to be more present to the students. I think at the heart of the relationship desire is the fact that we need to be attentive. Why are these kids committing suicide? Why are they turning to drugs? Why do they not care about being with their families? Who's not paying attention? We need to start paying better attention to them, because how is all this happening? And I think that goes back to kind of the simplicity that Rich was talking about in terms of starting small. Maybe you just notice one person at church or in your life at work that, needs the gaze of Christ. A simple, how are you today? I mean, these things seem so sentimental and cheesy, but I can't tell you how many times my students, I say, oh, how are you? Okay, you look kind of, you need a smile, you know, pick me up. And I just make a quick joke and say, I'm praying for you, and, just to notice what's going on with them, noticing simple things. So maybe it's like the Mother Teresa model, right? Start with a smile, start with small things, do small things with great love, but that's what gives me hope, right?
Beautiful. Yes, I love that, and it's amazing that you address that as a way to answer the call, just a smile. I mean, that sounds so trivial to people watching the news or thinking, oh my gosh, what needs to be done? We need to do something huge, something drastic. And Mother Teresa and so many of the saints said, it's the little things, it's the little things, it's one person at a time, it's a smile. And I know that I've seen over and over again how that little tiny, as you said, gaze of Christ can change someone's entire life. That can be the starting point for their relationship with Christ and open a door that you didn't have to do anything. You didn't have to open your mouth, and you've changed somebody's life. And recently I was reading about a true story about a man who wound up committing suicide, and he left a note, and he said, I'm going to jump off this bridge in New York, and I'm going to walk through such and such towns and this many miles. And if one person looks at me and smiles before I get there, then I'll turn around and you'll never have read this note. And he did it, So It's just amazing to think that he made it that far without one person stopping to even smile at him. But I think it's interesting. Yeah. I mean, he left a very sad but true message to people. You know, in that letter. So,
yeah.
Rich, I'll ask you the same thing. What gives you hope in the desperation? How do you answer that?
Well, first of all, I have hope because Christ said he would be with us always. I think it's important to remember when we get down about the state of our culture and the state of our times, that we already know the ending. You know, Christ has won. But in the meantime, I'm also encouraged by the little things I see in the grassroots. You know, different movements that the laity are coming up with, using their creativity. Catholic radio or blogs like yours, you know, podcasts like this, three people just, you know, sitting down and talking about some of these issues for the benefit of others. And I think this is kind of maybe the beginning of a reemergence of a Catholic culture, because we have none any longer. I mean, you look at pictures and movies from, you know, 60, 70 years ago, Bing Crosby, you know, and Going My Way, or, you know, some of these things where Catholicism was just part of the culture. When it's no longer that way. And so the only way you're going to reestablish a culture is through the grassroots, through the individual. And I think Simone really pointed at something in the beginning. She said that she tries to be a model for relationship and a model for discipleship. So that people have some sort of witness that happiness is possible in living this life. Nobody comes to faith alone. The church describes belief as an ecclesial act. It's not something that I just do with Jesus. Faith is way more than my personal relationship with God. It includes that, but faith can only happen with one another. And so, seeing different sparks of light when people are trying to make an attempt, where the laity are starting to wake up to their call, the Vatican II established, it's no longer. We can no longer just expect the clergy to do it all, or nuns and religious brothers. As a laity, we have to be able to take that up and engage ourselves. So, the smile, you know, how's your day going? You know, those are the beginning, you know, but we need to be intentional about them and not when you know, the whim hits us. So I think those are some areas in which I place my hope, and in which I try to encourage others to act in.
Great. And you were talking about being intentional just right there, which really struck me, and I love that, because again, it's so simple, but how many times do we walk through the checkout line and people are just talking on their cell phone without even acting like the person who's bagging their groceries or whatever is a person? You know, it's almost like you might as well be walking past a machine who's doing it all. And, you know, it's like getting that phone call in is more important than addressing the human being before us. And I think a lot of times we just have to start right there in our own lives and say, every person that I encounter, from the person that I'm never going to see again who's just bagging my groceries, to show them that they are loved, they are, you know, capable and expected to be happy. That's what they were created for, like Simone said. So I like how you said that intentional, not just, hey, how's it going, and then jump back on your phone, but to really, like, how is your day going? How is it? Is it busy? Like, how, you know, maybe just be the only person or one of the only people who actually speaks to them with intention.
Yeah, because the only way, you know, well, on the one hand, you have those random encounters that we have with people, and their only maybe encounter with God is going to be through your smile that day. But in kind of more of a long-term trajectory, the only way you're going to be able to bring somebody to faith is through a relationship with them. And you're only going to have a relationship with people if it's intentional, especially with the way our culture is nowadays, where everybody's got their heads down on their phones. So cultivating relationships with people and then bringing them to Christ, that's the path. Standing on a street corner, telling people, you know, Jesus is coming, we all better repent. It's not going to turn one apart around. So sitting down with somebody at the coffee shop and asking them how their day is and asking them, you know, how potty training is going, is the first step to evangelization. So, but that's only going to happen if we engage in it intentionally. Pretty much every time you see one of these tragedies, whether it's like gunmen or something, there's a deep sense of loneliness that each of them have. I think of the kid who shot up was UCLA back in May, and he had his YouTube video that was this whole diatribe of his loneliness. Now, was he extremely twisted in what he thought he was owed? Yes, of course. But it started because he never had love. And so this is something that we need to be really intentional about.
Thank you. Yes. And I feel like you're taking a little jab at the potty training thing after hearing that my son put a dirty diaper in my coffee the other day.
I don't quite understand how that happened, but I'm not a mother.
So. Wow. I definitely love ending with the hopeful message, and I think that always needs to be louder, especially as Christians. The hope always needs to be louder. Obviously, we are not a people to despair, and so our answer is always hope. And even in the darkest days and the darkest hours, there's always, as Rich said, flashes of life and glimmer of life and glimmer of hope. And because we know that Christ has already won, there will always be a glimmer of hope, or an abundance of hope, but it will always remain in some way, shape, or form. And I thank both of you for what you're doing and how you're sacrificing in your lives to continue to give to others and to continue to live out this message every day, in the smallest and biggest of ways. And I'll just let Simone conclude with just answering, what should our prayer look like as a church?
What should our prayer look like as a church? Oh, there's so many ways to answer that. pray to see the face of Christ every day. Because if we don't see it ourselves, even disciples, if we don't continually see his face and experience him, then there is no way we can propose it to others. So simple. But I need to be looked at by God in order to look at others.
Amen. All right, well, I will lift all of this up, all of our intentions and all of this as a prayer, and ask the Holy Spirit to come upon both of you and the work that you're doing and everyone listening, that they might be able to gain some confidence to, as Rich said, to just take that small step. And even if it is just changing a small aspect of their life, such as being intentional in their smile, in their, you know, Christ-like nature towards the complete strangers that they meet. And so we'll just offer all of these things in prayer, and I will continue to keep both of you in prayer through your ministry. And I thank you so much for taking the time to be a part of this and to shed your great wisdom and experience on these questions.
Thank you, Kim.
Thanks. God bless.